Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. My name is Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. So we've got 20 other episodes, if you've not already listened to them, across engagingic.com and also on iTunes and other podcast platforms. Whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on, you should be able to find our previous 20 episodes. Next week, I've got an interview with Chris Coburn. Chris is from XE.com, and we've got a really interesting conversation lined up for you, which is looking at the role of the middle manager or the line manager in communications. As many of us who are involved in internal communications and employee engagement and people management in general will know, the middle manager, the line manager, is an essential part of that mix. And Chris and I are planning to have a really interesting conversation about what that role is and how it can help enable or how it can actually get in the way of the whole communications flow and engagement flow within the organization. So I think many of us that will resonate with, any of us who've been line managers in our careers will recognize that that is a real key area of, you know, get that right and, you know, a lot of good things will follow. So that's next week's interview on episode 22. If you've not been across to our website, which is www.engagingic.com, please do so. You can sign up to our mailing list, listen to previous episodes. You can give us some feedback via the form at the bottom of the page. And if you could also head across to our Facebook group, we are running a survey on there, SurveyMonkey survey, just to get some feedback on the first series so far, but also to get some ideas and format ideas for series two. So if you've got any ideas that you'd like us to listen to, anything you'd like us to include in the show going forward. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I'm trying to wrestle with the idea that if it ain't broken, why fix it? It seems to be working well in the current format, but I'm conscious that there are other things that we could be including in the show that people might find of value. So, you know, genuinely looking to get your input on that. So please do not feel as though you're imposing by going across to engagingic.com and sending us a message about what you'd like us to include in the show going forward. So if you've not already done so, as I say every week, please do subscribe to our podcast on the platform that you're listening to it on. It really does help our visibility and helps other people find the show. Anyway, that's enough of that. On to today's interview. Throughout my career, I've always had an interest in volunteering and employee volunteering. I've worked in organizations where volunteering has been encouraged, either doing corporate social responsibility work or where internal volunteering has been encouraged. So it's something I've always been interested in. And at the moment, I'm a volunteer. I volunteer for the Institute of Internal Communications. I co-lead one of their hubs up in the northeast of England. So I wanted to really get my head around the benefits of volunteering, because some organizations pay lip service to volunteering. Some organizations have very structured programs that encourage employees to volunteer. But I wanted to understand, what are the benefits of having a volunteer program? Is it something that in today's world where organizations are pressed for resources that they can really be afford to be able to do? And also, is it something that has some strategic benefits to the organization? And if we do want to have a volunteering program, or we have a volunteering program at the moment, how do we make it better, or how do we introduce one from scratch? So I reached out to someone who is heavily involved in the volunteering space for an organization that I find really interesting as well. And they specifically look at employee engagement. That's what they do. So I think there's a lot of connections to be made in this interview between volunteering, between employee engagement, but also how we communicate a volunteering program to our employees and encourage them to get involved. So that's what today's interview is all about. So in today's interview, we are going to be looking at the topic of employee volunteers. My guest is Vlad Levitsky, who is currently the leader of the Volunteers Hub for Engage for Success. And we're going to find out all about a bit more about Engage for Success in a moment. But before that, though, a bit of an introduction to Vlad. Vlad was internal comms lead for EMEA at AT&T. He was also colleague engagement and comms lead at Barclays. And he's also been internal comms manager for EMEA at Canon. So, hello, Vlad. How are you?
Hi, Craig. I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for giving up your time. And I think you're down in London, aren't you? You've just got back from your holidays and you're back to cold and autumnal London.
Oh, yeah. It's miserable outside right now in North London. I'm in Islington.
Okay, right. Okay, well, brilliant. Well, Engage for Success. I admitted to you just in the kind of conversation we had before the interview, it's an organization I probably should know a little bit more about. And I guess some of our listeners are probably in the same boat. Some of them may be intimately associated or aware of what E4S and Engage for Success does. But if you can kind of give us the elevator pitch for Engage for Success, that would be really, really helpful.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a dynamic and volunteer-led movement. It's all about engaging employees, and the purpose is to inspire people and workplaces to thrive. The movement is founded on the belief that there's a better way to work in the UK, and it actually was founded almost a decade ago by David McLeod and Nita Clark after they published a report called Engaging for Success, which was commissioned by the Labour government at that time. And then it was actually launched at Downing Street by the new Tory government at the time. So it was very unusual, but it kind of carried over from one government to the next. But it obviously showed the relevance to retain the support for such an important initiative.
Yeah. Yeah. And sort of membership of Engage for Success, is it a volunteer network?
So it's not membership per se. Yeah. They're actually, so what's happened recently is, well, recently, last few years, is it's actually become part of a membership organization, CIPD, Chartered Personnel and Development. But the movement itself is not member-based. There are obviously no fees. It's not profit-based. So it's really a volunteer-led movement. It's quite a devolved movement. It's quite autonomous from CIPD. So they provide the budget and some governance. But in general, we're very much free to pursue our own agenda of employee engagement. The founders, David and Nita, they've stepped back from the leadership of the movement. And now it's kind of a devolved movement where we've also changed the model. And the model is now, it's all around the outputs that the thought and action groups create. The thought and action groups, they're either in regional areas, so they're around 12 around the UK, or they're around topic and sector. Okay. And topic and sectors, so they might be, a topic might be people productivity or engaging managers, for instance. Also, we've set up new hubs, and we have four hubs. So one is the TAGS, the Thought and Action Groups Hub, Partnerships Hub, the Communications Hub, and the newest hub is the Volunteers Hub. And this is, as you mentioned, this is where I'm involved. I got involved in leading it. Because it was a new hub, there wasn't actually a strategy for it, so I posed am driving a strategy to help the volunteers in the movement to sort of support them throughout their life cycle. So that's from recruitment to onboarding to induction to support throughout. And then, as you know, the nature of volunteers is that they step in and then they step out when other priorities come along. So it's also maybe about keeping in touch with lapsed volunteers and maybe bringing them back when they're ready.
Yeah, fantastic. So it sounds like a little bit like a matrix organization. Then you've got kind of geographical groups, and then kind of running across those, you've got these sort of special interest areas and of different themes as well. So could you be part of your local group or one of these functional or even these specialisms as well? Yeah.
And now with COVID, there are, of course, no face-to-face networking events. Yeah. So I'm actually part of different regional groups because some of them are more active than others. So they've got great content, for instance, in the Midlands. They've got great content coming out of London. So yeah, of course, you can join as many things as you like. So you can participate on the regional. You can participate in the thought and action groups on the topic and sector if there's a particular area of interest. And then there's the hubs. So hubs is kind of the back end that's supporting all the outputs from the area networks and from the topic and sector. So you could say, you know, in very rough terms, it is like a matrix organization, although it is very sort of loose organization.
Yeah.
And it, as I say, because it's devolved, a lot is left down to the volunteers to drive the outputs. And
okay.
And really, there isn't, for instance, top-down direction. It's very much ground up. It's very much a grassroots sort of movement.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so really, really interesting. Good, and a good bedrock for us to kind of build on for the rest of this. Because I'm involved with the Institute of Internal Communications. I help run one of the geographical hubs in the Northeast. So I totally get that, and I think it is really important. And I think that's why we're talking today, which is to recognize the importance of volunteers, but also when we're looking at employee volunteers. So from a Engage for Success perspective, do you find a lot of your volunteers do their organizations encourage them to get involved, or are they coming forward really just from their own professional self-interest, or is it a bit of a combination of both?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because actually historically there was a lot of organizations who were actually offering secondees. So they were actually paid employees who were doing a lot of the heavy lifting in the movement. And again, just in recent years, the organization has changed its model. And we have one last secondee who's actually being summoned back to his employer.
Right.
So really, the importance of volunteers is grown algorithmically in this movement. So there are organizations that will see the benefit. What I didn't mention is at the beginning when the movement was founded, there were about 43, I think, or so, more than 40 CEOs and leaders from industry who signed up to support and to promote the employee engagement agenda. And I think there was an open letter to the Times I could be getting that wrong. I better get my facts straight. But basically, it was an open letter signed by these leaders who were at the launch at Downing Street. And and as a result, a lot of these organizations that signed up to it were offering people, because they saw the benefit of their employees bringing back an employee engagement best practice and maybe a set of tools that they could use and so on. So now it's really almost 100% volunteer based. And as a result, we actually need more volunteers to do that kind of work, because, you know, the secondees were working for 6-12 months, more or less full time. And now we don't have the benefit of that. So volunteers are actually the lifeblood now, as they were before in the thought and action groups, but now also in the hubs that I mentioned, partnerships hub, communications hub, and volunteers hub, and the core team.
So I guess I can relate to this when you know that volunteering element isn't your day job, and trying to fit that around your other responsibilities, and you've not got the benefit of being permanently seconded onto something. It's a different dynamic, isn't it? It's a different set of expectations, and I think that'd be useful. It'd be interesting to explore that. How did you get involved in volunteering, Vlad? Were you in the organizations you worked with before? Was that a core part of your role, or was it really when you got involved with Engage for Success that volunteering was something that you got involved in?
Yeah, I got involved in Engage for Success because I wanted to actually get into the communication side. But then when I started speaking with one of the strategic directors, Joe Moffat, she said that we actually have this volunteers hub. And I said, well, actually, I do have experience from my work life.
Right.
When I was at Canon, we did a big project, a big sustainability project in Africa, where we were trying to develop our business. But we also realized very quickly that to do anything meaningful in the market also meant giving back to the community. And I was very heavily involved in creating sort of the comms strategy and developing the identity for this movement, but not this movement, but this initiative. From Canon. And we also relied very heavily on the effort of employees to give their time to train. This was a training project, so we were training people to use our equipment to make a living, because people just didn't have access to education in the same way that we have here.
Yeah.
So countries like Kenya, Nigeria, we actually relied very heavily on our own employees to give something back in the market. And also to promote it at the head office, for instance. Again, we just didn't have the budgets. We didn't have agencies. So we really had a lot to do with our own efforts. You know, we had to roll up the sleeves and actually, we did awareness days, for instance. So we needed a whole raft of people to, we put up a gallery of all the photography that we did, for instance. Somebody needed to do that, put up the pictures, print the pictures, put up the pictures, do a little gallery talk. Little air information booths. People had to man those booths. So that was probably my first taste of the power of employee volunteers to get things done just through pure graft and desire rather than because they were paid to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at Barclays, answer your question, at Barclays, I had a very similar experience, but that was really part of my remit. That was to come in and to lead some groups of volunteers in the community, in the offices, but also for a well-being project. So I really have worked with volunteers.
So you've been immersed in this idea of volunteering then for some time now. So again, I think it'd be really interesting to tap into that experience. So I guess we're talking, here about, we're talking about employee volunteers, and more organizations are using volunteering. And again, it's probably important to point out, we're not talking about organizations that are, like charities that are inherently staffed by volunteers. We're talking here about where they sort of kind of day job, it's not my day job sort of thing. So, I it's interesting that you'd said there that initially with Engage for Success, a lot of that initially was, being not forced, but being pushed forward or encouraged to come forward. But that was more under permanent secondments. But I guess if organization, people listening to this episode are thinking, we've got volunteer programs, we may have it as part of corporate social responsibility, or we may just encourage volunteering, we may give people time off work to do voluntary work. What are your thoughts on both, I guess, how volunteering might be relevant, and then leading into that from that, what's the benefit for the individual, the organization, and how that might, be something that is worthy of letting people take time off, or, adding to their already maybe their workload that they've got by encouraging them to do some voluntary work. So what are your thoughts around that? Why should organizations do it? How can they do it? And what are the benefits of doing it?
Yeah, I think, volunteering and getting employees to volunteer can really build and transform the workplace culture. It brings to life the company's values. So, for instance, if the company is socially minded, or if they have a vested interest in the environment, by doing things around those strategic interests, it sort of builds and creates the company's values internally. Mm. And a lot of the things actually that you end up doing with a group, it fosters a community spirit. Mm. It creates engagement in the people who do. It creates a community, creates better collaboration. And even the people who aren't involved, they sense the energy from the people who are involved. And they can also see if the company is delivering an impact. So, for instance, you can have different types of volunteering. You can maybe do things for charities externally, or maybe community initiatives. And then, of course, it can create a sense of pride, even if you're not involved, but just the fact that you're driving this impact. Like I was saying, in Africa, we trained 3,000 people over the course of 3 or 4 years at Canon. And even the people who weren't involved were talking about it proudly as a real impact to people's livelihoods, or benefiting society in some way.
Yeah.
But even if you're just doing it to create a collaboration in the workplace, or to build a better culture in the workplace, that can all engender a sense of pride in the workplace. So I think there are a lot of strong benefits to both the company and the individual. For the individual, there's so many different motivations for an individual to get involved. They might want to genuinely do some good for the company or the community, or, you know, you hate to say it, but they might be bored in their jobs and they're looking for something else to do, or they're just one of those people who just want to do more. There's a lot of social interaction, visibility to senior leadership, networking in the workplace, building new skills or getting new work experience. All the reasons are really valuable and valid.
Yeah. And do you find sometimes, and this is a very kind of abstract question, I guess, is that, because I guess the organization might have a cause that it wants people to volunteer for that maybe the people themselves aren't that particularly that interested in, or it doesn't really, you know, motivate them. And then it might be that individuals within an organization have something that they're very passionate about, but that doesn't necessarily fit with the organization's priorities. I mean, how does that get reconciled from your experience? So does there have to be a kind of perfect mind meld, as it were, between what the individual's looking to get and what motivates them and the organization? Or can it be that the individuals can get excited about something that's really kind of congruent with what the organization's all about and really kind of fits with that, but maybe isn't necessarily something that the individuals themselves would maybe go out of their time to do on their own if given the choice, perhaps? How does that work from your experience?
I think it starts with a culture that creates the freedom for people to set up these either social or community activities or groups and employee groups. And of course, the company, first of all, has to create a supportive culture. And this is one of the challenges, I think, for the companies, to create that supportive culture, which means freeing people, freeing time, freeing resources to do these things that aren't necessarily reflected in the bottom line. Mm. So that means you have to sort of set a direction and create a loose framework for a successful volunteer-friendly environment. And then if the strategies are very clearly defined, so for instance, you might have CSR initiatives or diversity and inclusion initiatives, and then people will step up because they might feel strongly, for instance, about women in the workplace, or they might want to form a Black professionals group, for instance, if you have an agenda of making your place a great place to work, then social teams and social groups are to create a fun environment might be a way to go. So I see what you mean. You know, does the fit between the company's agenda and the person's agenda, does it have to be perfect? Well, hopefully in a company you have a lot of people. And for instance, at Barclays, there was a well-being program. So the people who thought very passionately or felt very passionately about, for instance, mental health, they got involved on the mental health side. People who were a bit more sporty, they got more on the physical well-being side. And if you create maybe a menu of different options of employee groups, but the company doesn't create it, it's the individuals that create it. And I think what's really important to point out is that once the company says, actually, we have created the freedom for and the culture, then you probably need a few, what I think of as spark plugs to get it, to get other people to start firing, on all cylinders.
Yeah.
So if somebody thinks, oh, you know, I'd like to be a mentor to young people, and the company is a technology company, so maybe we use our technology, you know, skills, our IT skills, to go and share those skills at a local school or a youth charity. So the two things are aligned, and you can make them fit. And if the company, in the end, if you have senior leadership who are on board, they will appoint a sponsor. And this is really important, I think, to have an executive sponsor for a big initiative like that. Having the spark plugs, the people who are going to bring other people with them, and those other people become the doers or the regular contributors, but they might not be the sort of leader. A lot of people, I think, in the workplace don't really know how to help. I think they want to. The intent is good, but they don't have necessarily an idea of how. And then if the company creates that environment, people can get really passionate about doing some good through their effort and through their company's effort. And together, it creates a bit of a movement inside the company. Yeah. So it can really snowball. And I think those spark plugs, those kind of leaders of the employee groups can actually really bring along, you know, there's the regular contributors, but then there will be a whole pool of people who might dip in or not dip in.
And I think for me that raises a kind of one of these, we're going to, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about this, the payback for the organization. And I remember from my time, and this is going back a long time now, but we were involved in a business in the community initiative and we won an award for it. I wasn't one of the spark plugs. I was one of the followers, I'm not taking any credit for this, but it is interesting when I think back to that, in that the people who were the spark plugs weren't people who were in leadership roles within the organization. Exactly. And what it actually really did was it really shone a light on some latent talent. And those people then went on to realize that actually they had a bit of a skill that they could use within the organization that was valuable to them and to the organization, a transferable skill. And I think for me, that was one of the really powerful lessons I learned from that, which is, you know, that sometimes we do have this talent that sometimes can't shine through because for all sorts of reasons, but volunteering is a really great way of showcasing that, but also helping them realize that for themselves as well, I think. So
absolutely, you're absolutely right. And you really do need to allow people to step up. And again, it's about creating that culture where not everything is top down.
Yeah.
And even if they're more junior or younger or less experienced, or they don't have the gravitas or experience, but if they have that drive and the passion to be the spark plug, it could be that maybe socially they can also bring people with them. So they might be quite an engaging person that people want to work with. And they might not be passionate about that particular cause, but having that cause is really important. But also having the people, the spark plugs, to bring people with the cause. But, volunteering could be very simple. You know, somebody might think, oh, I love reading. Maybe other people love reading with me. Why don't I form a book club? That's a form of volunteering in the workplace, and that creates a social interaction between employees. And then, you know, once a month, they get together and discuss a book. And that could lead to, all of a sudden, it maybe spins off on into a women's group or an investment club or some other thing that could, again, it just bring colleagues together under a banner. So that cause doesn't have to be a grand cause of, you know, educating people in Africa or giving to charity. But I mean, those are very helpful as well. It's helpful to have that kind of focused approach. So if you do have a cause or many causes, you can probably, and you were talking about the fit between the agenda of the company and the agenda of the individual, you can find different individuals to fit into different agendas.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting, actually. And I hadn't, you know, that's a light came on for me there, which was, I guess from me, my perspective, when I think about employee volunteers, I'm thinking of more of that externally going out, you know, with working with a charity, painting walls, decorating, tidying garden. No, and absolutely. And absolutely vital. But what you're saying there is that you can volunteer internally. You can volunteer to set something up within your organization just to benefit your colleagues or your internal community, maybe as a springboard then to go on to do some external volunteering. But volunteering doesn't have to be necessarily community facing, or great and important though that is.
Yeah, well, in the days of when we were all in the office, organizing a drinks social. Well, somebody has to do that, right? It doesn't happen by itself. So somebody has to go and get the drinks, maybe secure the budget for the drinks, maybe secure the tables, the space, all of that, the communication, all of that around creating a small event with however many, a dozen or 200 people showing up at this event, it takes time and effort. You know, somebody organizing a Christmas party, they don't do it because they're paid to do it. They do it because they've either volunteered or the senior manager has said, please do it. And that can be fraught with danger as well if you're appointing somebody. I've seen it work go really well and people really thrive, or they kind of wither under the strain and they're not happy doing it. It's really obviously better if people put their hands up to do it.
Yeah, and, definitely.
And that's what I'm talking about, creating that culture of empowering people to step up and to actually do what's interesting to them. And some people love organizing drinks and Christmas parties.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So just before we leave this idea of the return on investment for volunteering, you mentioned when we were talking before the interview about the four pillars of Engage for Success, and then they kind of relate to some more kind of, I guess, tangible, measurable, quantifiable, or at least, you know, so could you just run us briefly through those four pillars and how they relate to what you're trying to deliver as an organization, but how it fits in with this overall thought about volunteering?
Yeah, so we mentioned about Engage for Success. So Engage for Success, this engagement movement in the UK, the report David McLeod and Nita Clark had put out that stressed these four pillars that most successful organizations shared. One was a strategic narrative. So basically you have to have a strong backstory and strategic story about your company that people understand, and it's well cascaded throughout the company. Engage managers was number two. So it's not just about all employees, but the managers are engaged and engaging. Okay. Employee voice, so it's not all about one-way communication. It's about back and forth. So the employee voice is not just about the annual survey once a year, but it's about employees feeling like they have some input into how their team is going forward, how their company is structured, how the strategies are implemented. And the fourth pillar, and this is really important, as all of them are, integrity. So there's no say-do gap. You know, we do what we say, and we say what we do, and we stick with that. Yeah. So those four pillars are sort of the pillars of engagement. And I think the success factors for engaging employee volunteers are very similar.
Yeah.
And the strategic narrative is all about purpose, right? It's about trying to tie in the things that we're doing in the marketplace in the private sector, we're probably trying to make a profit. So what are the things that we're doing? You know, are we making widgets, or are we delivering a service? And tying that in somehow to the purpose of the volunteer activity.
Yeah, the cause, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the cause and the purpose. And you can create a community around the cause, or several causes, like I mentioned about sustainability or diversity, or just making a nice working environment, right? So that's also a cause. Make yourself a great place to work is also a cause. So you get people to sign up for this. They believe in it because they see where the company is going and that they're doing something extra, not just for to make a buck or to make a quid. Engage managers, it's about, I think I link that to permission. So your managers should give that autonomy and that freedom to not just sit at your desk and get your work done, but also to have that freedom to maybe do something a little bit extracurricular. And also it's about having the senior management on board. So I think an executive sponsor is really important because then it shows that the company is serious about these things. And it could be a foundation, for instance, that you've set up, but your company has set up, or it could be an executive sponsor for this employee group. But someone senior who can actually help and guide and open doors if they need to be opened.
Yeah.
And it just creates an environment that shows it's okay to spend a few hours a month maybe running a fundraiser or a charity or creating networking opportunities for your colleagues. Right?
Yeah.
The third one, employee voice. So we talked about those spark plugs. So I think it's giving people, as you mentioned, people maybe who aren't the leaders in the organization, but giving them the opportunity to lead on something or to collaborate on something. So you need the spark plugs, but you also need the doers. And the doers could be the regular contributors. They could be just dabblers who come in once in a while to maybe do a specific task. And that's really important. Just give them a task and they will do it. Man a stand for an hour. Can you create this email template because you're really good at design? That sort of thing. And then they've backed away. So they've done something that's not really part of their day job, but then they have contributed in some way. And that's really valuable as well.
Yeah.
And there's also, we talked about external volunteering. So there's the sort of one-day philanthropists. A lot of companies offer a charity day or two charity days. So the people only get involved when they're going to paint the wall in the school, like you said.
Right? Yeah.
Or to dig up a garden, a community garden. So that's also really valuable because it gives you extra manpower, extra labor, and that effort and energy. And it becomes a social, collaborative experience that people remember.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is integrity. So link it up to the sort of consistency of message and give your support to the initiative, whatever it is. So do what you say. If you say you're going to support young people, as an example, don't stop doing that the following year.
Yeah.
Just, you know, have a consistency about it. And maybe every few years you change your focus. That's normal, just like any strategy. But, you know, if a new CEO comes along and says, oh, that's it. Nobody is going to have any spare time to do any of this volunteering stuff. That probably won't sit very well with the people who invested their time and effort and their passion.
I love that. I really like those four stages and how you've then linked that into this, you know, the how engagement links to volunteering. It's got really nice symmetry to it. I was writing that down as you were talking about it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And one thing you mentioned about measuring the impact, I think it's really also important to measure the impact at the end and then shout about the successes. So the successes could be how many people attended or hours donated or how much money did we raise. What's the impact to the community? So, you know, yes, we painted a wall for this center, but, you know, they maybe had mold. So the impact is that we got rid of the mold that's in the in this community center. And another simple way is just do a quick survey afterwards to get feedback from the participants and the beneficiaries. So if it was community center, ask those stakeholders, what did they think? Maybe get them on record, but get a video. That's really helpful because those testimonials are really powerful, not only to justify the effort, but also get more people involved for the future.
Yeah. So just from a practical perspective then, just sort of bringing things towards a conclusion, there may be organizations, I mean, there may be people listening to this, to our show, which are thinking, okay, we've got a volunteer program. It's kind of working, but we maybe need to invest a little bit more time in it. It might be working pretty well and we'd like to make it better, or we might not have any sort of volunteer program at all. It'd be really useful, I think, to tap into your experience about, you know, how do you get us started or how do you make an existing program better, but also maybe what are some of the watch outs, some of the pitfalls that people can maybe stumble into, you know, with good intent, but to be aware of if you are going to kind of go down this route of volunteering or setting up a volunteering program and encouraging people to volunteer. So how do we do it? How do we make it better? But also what are some of the things we need to watch out for?
I think the top-down approach can work if you really have a foundation and some charities. But I think what's really helpful is that people do it because they want to. And so then it becomes a grassroots approach. Mm-hmm. So having a bottoms-up approach is really, I think, lovely. And then it becomes it becomes full of people who want to do it, not because they're mandated to do it.
Yeah.
And I think some of the pitfalls are that be careful to expect too much. And it's not people's full-time job. So so when you do have volunteers, you know, and I made this mistake myself. I mean, come from a marketing background and a sort of very project deliverables-led mindset. I had to be a lot more patient. And things take, they just take longer. And you can't be as demanding. It's not an agency producing these materials. It's people who might not have any experience in producing it, but they put their hand up to do it. So there's a level of understanding about the quality of output, and also the fact that people do have other priorities. So it's about being patient. It's about creating a loose framework. If you make it too rigid, then it is becoming mandated. Let the volunteers themselves design it if they can, especially the spark plugs and the spark plugs and the regular contributors. And you just have to accept that people will withdraw from volunteering. They might do one or two events and then they're too busy, or they get promoted, or they start a family. And you constantly have to be recruiting. And even the spark plugs, who were really driven and passionate, can get pulled away by careers and life and circumstances. So it's really good to also have a pipeline. So you have a pool of volunteers, those maybe regular contributors and maybe even dabblers, or people you can just ask. Appointing, we mentioned about appointing people, it can work and it might not work, but asking people, would you be interested?
Encouraging.
You know, you've got a knack for doing this kind of mentorship, for instance. Would you be interested in leading a mentorship program that we're starting up for the local school kid?
I guess having it on a kind of the radar of managers when they're doing a performance review or a development review.
Exactly. That's actually a really good point.
To sort of be able to say, have you thought about this? You know, and again, as you say, it's not necessarily, you know, suddenly, you know, build it and they will come. Sometimes we do need to help people to see that there's some value in something that they may not have even thought of, or maybe dismissed because it's not their thing. So yeah, I think it's really interesting what you said there, which is this, you know, if we try and make it too rigid, if we try and make it too structured, if we try and put, you know, make it too formal and have all of these kind of systems and processes around it, it's going to just feel like another job that we're not getting paid for. Whereas if we can kind of make it more organic, but give people permission to be able to do this, then they're much more likely to create something that's more sustainable, much more and more likely to deliver what we want it to deliver, rather than it being something that then needs to be managed and you know, regulated and monitored and then potentially disbanded because we don't think it's working, sort of thing.
Well, and you'll have strategic reasons for doing some things, like the initiative in Africa, but that I'd mentioned at Canon. That was a strategically important initiative, but getting people to volunteer for it and express themselves in that initiative and bring their skills and their experience that maybe they didn't think was valuable anywhere else, but in the workplace. You know, if they're good at fixing cameras, that's only good for the everyday job. But then you get out there and you actually fix cameras for the people who actually need them in a third world country, in a very needy environment. So it's also sort of sparking people's imagination that, actually I could do something more with the skills that I have, and I do enjoy doing this. It's a really interesting area, and I can't say I'm an expert in it. And like you said about the third sector, they live and die by volunteers. For me, it's a relatively new area of interest, and in Engage for Success, working with volunteers who are not paid employees is also a different kind of challenge, because you do, like you say, you have to keep them motivated, but also give them that freedom to express themselves. But also, I think you do need to give some direction and some tasks.
Yeah.
And just leave them to do it. Micromanaging volunteers is the worst.
Doesn't work, it's really interesting. I was listening to a radio program a few months ago, probably years ago now. Actually, I've lost all perspective of time over the last few months. But it was it was really interesting because they were talking about they were talking about more third sector, you know, professional charities here staffed by volunteers, and they were saying that a lot of charities have been sending their kind of managers, into businesses to learn how to manage businesses, how to have kind of KPIs and performance reviews and all of that sort of thing. And then we've been trying to bring that back into the charities and the volunteers, and the volunteer just bombed. And actually what they were saying, that paradoxically, what actually corporates should be sending their managers into a voluntary organization to see actually, and I think it's a really interesting question is if we weren't paying our people to come to work but they were volunteering to do that, how would we motivate them? How would we get the best out of them? How would we get them to show up and do a great job every day? Okay, it might be very difficult with a job perspective, but I think, if you think about, it goes to the heart of all what you've been talking there about engagement, isn't it? It's about doing it because I feel there's some deeper purpose to what I'm doing rather than I'm just showing up to get the paycheck. I think there's a lot can be learned, as we talked about ROI and benefits of volunteering, but managing volunteers, I think, is a great way to learn how to get the best out of people. Because if you can do it with volunteers, and you really should be able to do it with people who are getting paid to do something, but what you want to keep to engage them, and so they're giving their best and bringing their full self to work every day. So
you will find those leaders that, as you mentioned earlier, that just emerge because they stepped up into something that they're actually genuinely interested in. And all of a sudden you see that skill set that maybe was innate or needs development, but it's a really great way also of bringing people up the ranks, as you said.
Definitely. Well, look, that's been absolutely fantastic, Vlad. I've really enjoyed that. I think it's been really interesting. And you said you're not an expert, but I would contest that. I think you've got a lot of expertise around this area of employee volunteers, this idea of how to get the best out of them. Obviously, your role at E4S at the minute is strongly linked to that. So I really value what you said. And I've made some copious amounts of notes there. I love I'm going to go and find this report that you talked about, because
I can email it to you if you like.
Yeah,
that will be on engageforsuccess.org. Yeah,
we'll put a link into the show notes. I'll talk about that. With some of the links, and we'll definitely put a link into that because I'm going to find it anyway. But those four pillars absolutely really resonated with me, and I'm kind of annoyed with myself that I probably have come across them before, but I'm at that time of life where it's sort of soaking things up and retaining them for a long period of time gets more and more challenging. But that's been really, really interesting. Absolutely fantastic. It's really provoked my thoughts, and I'm actually, there's a piece of work that I'm doing at the minute that it's sparked a plug for me anyway that I'm going to go back to. Vlad, I warned you, as I do with all of my guests, that at the end I always ask them to share something with us that even people who know you quite well may not know about you, or might go, oh, I didn't know that. So come on, I'm all ears now. And you told me, you were going to tell me earlier, and I said no, save it till now. I want it to be as fresh as a daisy, as it were. So I'm over to you.
Okay. Well, in the last 4 years, I've thwarted not one bike thief, but two bike thieves.
Oh.
And
are we talking about motorbikes or push bikes?
I have a Brompton folding bike.
Right.
I wasn't really a cyclist until I started cycling to work, and now I really love it. Yeah. And I was coming back from work one time. It was just after the clocks had changed, so it was already dark. And a kid stepped out of the shadows and demanded the bike from me.
Right.
Well, I wasn't having it until he pulled out a knife.
Right. Oh, dear.
Yeah. And images all of a sudden from those news reports of all the, kids getting stabbed for their knife or just for no reason.
Slate
at all.
For a Brompton. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently these things have really high resale value, which
they're not cheap. Yeah. And I know
they hold their depreciation really well. Yeah. So I have the presence of mind, luckily, to just keep my bike between me and him, and started shouting for help. And I was terrified, honestly. I mean, it was a kid with a knife.
Yeah. And was the bike folded?
I'm cycling with it. I'm cycling. Okay, He stepped off the curb.
He stepped
off the curb. And so anyway, so somebody also kind of came to my rescue.
Came to the rescue.
Yeah, and he ran off. And my heart was racing, and I couldn't sleep.
I can well imagine,
The next few nights I couldn't sleep. But it took me about three nights of really fretting about this. You know, what could have been? You have all these fantasies of, I should have done that differently, right?
Yeah.
And then there was a click in my mind, and it was, well, wait a minute, I didn't get hurt. I still had my bike and the stuff that was in the bag in the bikes, and it was obviously a laptop and all the other things.
Yeah.
So I won. You know?
Yeah.
After that, I just slept like a baby.
But and you then, said it's happened again.
Yeah, and then it happened again. It was a slightly different circumstances. Yeah, 2 years ago. So this was I'd just gone to a shop and I'd left my bike. I locked it up again, same bike, and it came out and it was gone. The lock was there, so they snipped through the lock, and I was just devastated. You know, so I started getting notifications from all the different marketplaces. I won't name names, but you know, where online
where these things are usually reappear. Yeah,
you can imagine. So after 2 weeks, I gave up hope and I went to the bike shop and they put a deposit down on a new one. They're not cheap, but I just thought, you know what, I really love it. So I went to put a deposit down on a new one. That night, after they put the deposit down, I got a little notification that another Brompton bike was for sale. A used Brompton bike was for sale. I looked at it, and that's definitely mine.
Right.
A friend of mine zoomed in on the pictures, and he saw the frame number. Yep, that's definitely mine.
Yeah.
And the next day, I got in touch with a few friends, and we plotted this sting operation. And I posed as a buyer in a fairly public place. Actually, it wasn't me. I sent my friend because I thought they might recognize me from when I came out of the shop. So a friend of mine posed as my buyer with my wife, and they were looking at this bike. And eventually, I was trying to call the police. The police weren't interested. I guess they had bigger fish to fry. And they were advising me. They all advised me to not go. I talked to three or four different police officers. They all said, don't go. And, you know, you don't know what danger you're putting yourself into. It's just a bike. And we went. We went, met him at a petrol station. My friend checked the serial numbers. He took it for a spin a few times. And eventually I just came out of from behind where I was sitting in cover, put my arms around the offender. Somebody else called the police. The police were there in a minute. They arrested him. And some of the best bits were afterwards, the police officer shook my hand and said, I want to thank you. I wish more citizens would do things like this.
Do that.
Yeah. So completely contradicting what the others had said. And the second thing that made me laugh and still makes me laugh is we were sitting around having a drink, celebrating at the pub. And my friend John had the brilliant idea of putting a bad review and giving a 1-star rating to the seller.
Trying to get a PayPal claim back. I didn't expect that at all. And I'm glad you didn't tell me beforehand. So no, that's quite a saga. And yes, I'm in awe of your bravery in both cases, because both to not just say take the bike and like,
I think it's just bloody-mindedness.
And I don't blame you as well. I don't blame you. I'm a cyclist as well. If anybody tried to touch my bike, I would be very miffed. So I totally understand where you're coming from. So it is absolutely. Well, look, it's been tremendous speaking to you, to Vlad. I've got a few links that we're going to share on the show notes. One is your LinkedIn profile. I'll put your email address on there as well if anybody wants to contact you directly. And you'd also mentioned about putting some resources on there for Engage for Success. So I'll put the volunteer email address if anyone would like to volunteer to be part of Engage for Success. I'm going to put the domain name, the website for Engage for Success if anyone wants to go there, and we'll find this report as well, and we'll put that on. And you also mentioned on the Engage for Success website there is there's a podcast and also a newsletter that people can sign up for there and listen to.
That's right.
Yeah. And is there anything else, Vlad, I think we've given people plenty of ways of engaging with you and some of the things you've been talking about today.
I just wanted to say thank you. I mean, I think you've covered everything. Craig, it was really a lot of fun to chat with you about this topic, and really thank you for giving me the opportunity to be part of your podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure and a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. Well, the gratitude is all mine. I really appreciate you giving up the time and sharing your expertise. And I think, you know, it's definitely going to be something that that I think it's not something that we talk about very often. And I think it's a really interesting area. And while we're talking about employee engagement and getting the best out of our people and creating compelling workplaces, I think this is definitely a huge part of that. And I think it will be really interesting. So thank you very much, Vlad. Take care.
Pleasure.
Look after your bike. No more bike adventures, please. You know.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
We'll get a third story of defying the bike thieves.
I hope I don't have to tell another story like that.
Okay, take care, Vlad. Thank you. Sure.
Thanks, Craig. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ideally, everyone in your organization would be on the same page. They'd be facing in the same direction and towards its vision and goals. However, in today's fast-moving world, as we all know, it can be really hard to get employees to see the big picture. For example, what are we aiming for? How are we going to get there? And how does my role contribute? When your employees don't see the big picture, they can make the wrong decisions, they may feel less of a sense of belonging, and they may not fully contribute towards the organization's objectives. So how do you consistently put large numbers of people in the picture in a way that helps them understand what your organization is trying to achieve, but also do that in an engaging and effective way? At the Big Picture People, we combine visualization, discussion, and interaction to fully engage your employees in the organization's big picture. We create light bulb moments for your employees, and we bring your values, your strategies, your objectives, and your change processes to life in a really rich, clear, and visual way. We also show your employees the complexity of the world that you're operating in and how their role contributes towards organizational priorities. So if you see the value of putting your people in the picture, head across to thebigpicturepeople.co.uk and book a free 30-minute consultation call via the link on our homepage. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have. Anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that would be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.